So you just have to have a really long time horizon and just go, I'm not going to oversell. I see like a lot of people, they're desperate. They try and sell everything and they don't realize that like sometimes if you sell a bad customer, a bad client, it actually like cuts into your profits in ways that you don't really imagine.
You're listening to the Ecom Exits Podcast with your host, Nate Ginsberg. Learn the best tips and tactics to improve profits, cash flow, and maximize your e-commerce business value on the way to a successful exit. Welcome to the show.
Hello and welcome back, podcast listeners. I'm joined today by my friend Jesse Hanley calling in from Japan. Super excited to have him on the show to talk about his super awesome e-com software, Bento. Jesse is a bit of a renaissance man, experience with SEO, a lot of background in SEO, as well as also running a content agency. And then he's got his baby Bento, which I'm excited to learn more about and share with you all here. So Jesse, thanks so much for joining us.
Cool, man. Thanks for the glow up at the start. The Renaissance man. I haven't heard that one before. I like it.
Hey, it's true. I mean, you have a wide range of things that you're involved with, you know, different types of businesses, different models that are all going well. And also not to sacrifice the health and training, which still a core part. So yeah, thanks for being an inspiration for all of us.
No worries, man. I mean, it's an eclectic interest, right? No, it's been fun.
So yeah, I mean, I alluded a little bit in the intro, just some of the things that you're up to. You know, how did you get into software?
Yeah, so day to day, I work on Bento with all the other projects, like the agency and stuff. With the agency in particular, a team runs that and they're off. And it wasn't like that for like the longest time. In the beginning, in terms of like how I actually got into software, I used to work in the supplement industry, in e-commerce. So in Australia, I used to sling supplements on the internet. And I started teaching myself just basic code when I was doing that e-commerce stuff. So the site was originally built on, it was like some custom Australian e-commerce platform. And then it was Magento, and then it was WooCommerce. And so as we went from platform to platform, I would just kind of teach myself how to code, you know, hack on plugins, change stuff, just do basic JavaScript things. That business did pretty well. And then we got to a point where I kind of negotiated an employment agreement with the company where I would basically work remotely as a contractor. And then when I made that transition, I started picking up more and more clients. And then on more and more projects, I would just try more and more things, you know, a little bit of JavaScript. And then on the weekends, I would kind of learn some Ruby on Rails. And it was just very eclectic for like the longest time. And then around 2017, I always get my dates wrong, but like around then, roughly 1,000 something 100 days ago, I came across a domain, and that domain was Bento Now. And there was two social media handles, at Bento on Twitter and then Bento on Facebook. And I saw this bundle of assets being sold on Flippa for barely anything. And it was an old SF startup that had died. And I reached out to the guy and bought his whole bundle of assets. So including the domain with a whole bunch of links. Well, the fire sale, because he was going out of business. So he just wanted cash. Grabbed that and then went, oh, what should I do with this? And I was like, I'm going to build a software company on it. It's something I've always wanted to do. But I didn't really have strong coding skills. I was kind of a script kiddie. So I hired a guy called Andrew Culver to kind of help build the first version of what I wanted to build. And at the time, that was like personalization and analytics. It was like a gist of an idea. And then, yeah, just kind of kept teaching myself how to code from there. It was something that I've like always wanted to do. But it wasn't until I started building Bento, the business, that I actually took coding really seriously. And yeah, had Andrew to kind of mentor me for the first 2.5 years, which was a big learning process and a lot of fun.
Maybe to start, I mean, I guess like, what is Bento? What is it when it started? I mean, you had this domain and decided you wanted to build something. And like, what did you start building? And how did you decide what to start building?
Sure. So the first version of it, which has turned out to be the way that we built it, turned out to be a really good decision for now, was essentially an analytics platform that let you change a website based on what people were doing and their profiles, right? So what they purchased, yada, 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 their location, the weather in their region. It was personalization software. And it was stuff that I was doing already on e-commerce sites myself. So I was just using JavaScript and I was coding stuff up. And I wanted to have a SaaS that essentially did what I was doing consulting-wise, yeah, that I could like kind of bill for. Then what we started finding out was that people really liked the data that was coming in. It was cool that you could be like, oh, if people visit a page that contains the word e-commerce, tag their industry as e-commerce. But then they're like, oh, I'd like to send an email based on that. And so then we built on email marketing, and then we built out sequences and automation integrations and workflows. And it's just been a constant process of working with customers and then also myself, because I still had clients up until like last year-ish, and just working with them and just trying to get the job done the best that I could. So now the way that the product looks like is it's a full marketing automation suite. So we cover everything from really good ad tracking, analytics, email marketing, marketing automation. We've even got a live chat platform on there. Yeah, there's a lot. It's a very big platform. If you're looking at like competitors, you'd probably think of Klaviyo, ActiveCampaign, MailChimp, ConvertKit. Those types of players, but much bigger on the data side because we collect a lot more. We don't just track contacts. We actually track all anonymous visitors as well, which ends up leading to like a very rich profile.
Yeah. Talk kind of more about that and the data that you are able to see and how you're able to segment. Because that stuff I know from previous discussions we've had, you know, you telling me about Bento, that's like pretty wild, the kind of segmenting and then therefore different actions that you can trigger based off of some of these segments. And my understanding is it's pretty unique. And so, you know, talk more about what some of that stuff is and, you know, what you can do with it.
Yeah, sure. What are some cool like practical applications? So like the one that we see most of the time, basically once you install the script, everyone just starts tracking ads. And it's nice to use Bento as a place to verify your Facebook and, you know, Google ad data. So in Bento, you can just say, all right, find me all the subscribers and customers that came from a specific campaign and like show me their email addresses, which is something you can't do on Google Analytics. You can't do on Facebook Analytics, can't do on Facebook ads. And so you can actually use Bento to verify that traffic, which is kind of cool.
So through Bento, you can identify the ad campaigns that customer client came from.
And then click into their profile and then actually in detail, see everything in very granular detail, which is something that especially like e-commerce people, I think that like they obviously appreciate it. But the segment that's kind of really appreciated is like consultants that are doing a lot of like B2B sales. For example, one of our customers, he was looking at like one subscriber and the journey that subscriber took to actually like sending an invoice and paying a check was kind of unreal. The guy was like looking at Trustpilot and a whole bunch of different sources, which you can detect in Bento because we'll track multi-touch ads on a profile as well, not just first click and last click, but you'll see like the whole ad history, the whole event history, and then you tie that back to the original invoice. And it's very enlightening to actually work out what the true journey of someone is, not just when they're first identified, not when you just first find out their email address, but all the event data before that, because that's all consolidated to it. So I mean, from the tracking side, it's kind of cool because you get a lot of answers to things that you didn't have before.
Yeah, well, okay. So a couple questions on that. I think the first is what enables you or how can you see this like, you know, longer history journey and like, you know, what allows you to be able to see that this person went to Trustpilot and kind of get that whole like backstory?
Yeah. So, I mean, we're essentially an analytics platform that sends emails. So whereas email platforms, they try and bolt on analytics after the fact. And there's a lot of really like nuanced tracking stuff that makes that, yeah, really hard to do. And so with Bento, because we started building a personalization and analytics platform first, adding an email to that visitor profile was something that happened actually like a little bit later on. And so Bento is first and foremost an analytics and a tracking platform and that happens to be able to send emails. And because of that, we track all these anonymous sessions, just like Google Analytics and Facebook and all those platforms. But yeah, but you can, you know, search all that data just as you would a CRM.
What type of data then, or what kind of profiles do you get on, and also, and these are mostly, I mean, a lot of them are like anonymous. These are anonymous users, or until they opt in, then it can track into like the actual profile. And so like, what kind of profiles do you get on these people?
Yeah, you learn. I'll talk about like my experience running Bento on Bento, dog food in it, right? So like for me, it's kind of nice because in Bento, I know where my leads are coming from and all of them basically come from Twitter. I like tweet quite a lot and I get a lot of customers from there. So when they click on a bio link, there's a UTM campaign, you know, UTM URL linked from my bio. They click on that. They visit the site. They're anonymous. They browse around. Maybe they do that 6 or 7 times. I've cookied them. I know who they are. They then book a call with me. They're then identified when they book that call because, you know, they fill out a form and then that form identifies them. Then maybe they sign up. Maybe I close them on the call and then they start using the product. And so every day I like log in. I see what my users are doing. I see who recently logged on. I work out if people have hit any errors, and a whole bunch of automations are going on powered by Bento behind the scenes. So when a new customer signs on, they are going through the onboarding and they get to the credit card. It asks for your credit card because we need a credit card up front, and they leave. We have an abandoned card email that comes from me that says like, hey, credit card forms are really scary. Like, I'm sorry that you ran into that, but like, this is the reason why I ask for it. And like, I hope you understand. And a lot of people reply to that and then I close a deal. So that's one practical way that like I use Bento. Another one is when people use certain features, I trigger like email sequences that are kind of tip sequences. So when someone starts using email marketing or they click on the workflows tab, I have an automation that says, if someone views the workflows tab, add them to the email sequence for workflow tips. And then that's a series of 6 emails that get sent over the course of a week because that's what they're doing. And then they get those emails, they get a whole bunch of tips, they go, oh, cool, that's super helpful. And then they start using the tool more. So there's a lot of that type of automation that I like personally use that I really enjoy. And then, I mean, there's so much more. I mean, customers talk to me on live chat, which Bento also does. There's a whole bunch in there. It's just like my tool. I built my tool for myself and it feels good to use.
I'm curious about like the profile of, you know, like I don't know, what type of information do you, you know, you mentioned like what, like location, weather, like what, I don't know, like what kind of profiles do you have on these visitors?
Yeah. So I think what has been interesting is changing the mindset from, you know, with Google Analytics and Facebook Analytics, it's very like macro. You like type in a campaign and then you just see numbers, and those numbers don't actually mean too much. Also, if you like audit those numbers and if you run tracking software like I do, you actually start realizing like a lot of the numbers are pretty bodged up, and it's nice. It's very, very nice having visibility into how things work on the analytics side to actually know how users interact and what analytics is valuable. So for me, I like diving into individual profiles of customers who have converted and start actually going through their event history and trying to work out like, what are they doing in the product? For Bento, so many of our customers literally log in every single day, and there's a very large portion of them, and they just use one feature, which is the visitor browser. And so like in my head, selling Bento, I sell people on a whole bunch of things. I sell them on using automations, live chat, personalization, yada, yada, yada. But a lot of the time, a lot of our users just look at their customers. So they go to the visitor page, they go to people, and then maybe they do some filtering and some scanning there. So that was like an insight that I got out of diving in to individual profiles, just to actually work out what are people doing.
And so what information are they looking at when they are looking at their customers?
Whole bunch of stuff. I think if they're software founders, they're generally like paranoid. Who's using my tool? Who's not using my tool? Who are the people that used my tool last month and they haven't come back? There's a lot of that. There's a lot of like looking at their user base. There's a lot of SaaS customers that will look at customers that haven't logged in for 60 days. They're running that report and then they'll send them a broadcast to try and bring them back in. Maybe they'll just contact them manually. There's a few ways to do that. E-commerce people, I think, just like seeing revenue graphs. So on e-com world, they'll like use a ad query. They'll type in, find me anyone that has seen an ad that contains Facebook top of funnel or whatever, you know, you've got set as a UTM campaign. They'll see all their subscribers and then they'll click like, you know, either a ROAS report or a revenue over time report or a delayed attribution report, a cohort analysis, whatever it is. But there's a lot of that stuff, just kind of constant checking on numbers and stats, just to keep a pulse on things. Because honestly, most business owners are flying pretty blind and they look at the Google Analytics stuff and they look at the Facebook Analytics stuff and they kind of just trust it and they don't ever verify things. And I think it's often helpful to verify your data and what's going on because it gives you a little bit of a realistic view on things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. And so what has been some of the surprises as you've been building this software business?
Yeah, visitors' browsing behavior across the board is very chaotic. Most people browse very chaotically. Like when you actually dig into the profiles, you're like, wow, like, is this how people use the internet? It's crazy. You also realize that things aren't as transactional as it seems, especially if you're a website that tries to collect an email up front. And if you start sending emails through Bento, which is like highly encouraged, we're able to kind of consolidate profiles across multiple devices and properly track people, which is really cool. And then when you start realizing like what it actually takes to convert someone, especially with really long buying cycles, where maybe you collect an email, you know, in January and you convert them in October, it's very interesting seeing all the different things that they do before they actually give you that PO, or even just put in an order for a $39 product. We realize that people's buying behaviors are very chaotic. And even though Facebook wants to tell you that, yeah, someone saw an ad and they converted in a day, 7 days, 28 days, it's rarely that. And I think when you look at businesses, you like if you've been in a certain business for a really long time, you feel that way, but you're never able to actually verify that that's true. Yeah, in Bento, you can. Like you can look at a profile and you can verify that, oh, wow, like this guy saw my top of funnel ad in January and we got his email. He joined the subscriber list. He watched, you know, he saw 10 emails. He joined our welcome sequence, but he converted at the end of the year in December.
I actually heard it was an interview with Andre Chaperone. You gone through any of his stuff or?
A lot of it, yeah. He's a great copywriter.
Yeah, I mean, he's the man for anyone who's not familiar. He has like the OG gold standard of email marketing course called Autoresponder Madness. And anyway, it was an interview with him and his current business partner. And they were talking about how like, I forgot exactly the stats, but it was like, most people actually buy like after 90 days. And so it's like everyone's focused on, you know, they're talking about like, you know, their email marketing and kind of engagement. And it's like, you know, they're trying to like get the sales in the first, you know, 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, whatever. And then after that, they, you know, if they haven't bought, they'll like clean the list or whatever. And they're saying how that's actually like the absolute wrong thing to do because the majority of people actually buy after that and longer. And I think that just shows of like, you know, building that it takes time to build trust in this. And
there's a lot of nuanced features in Bento that like I built with that knowledge. So like, for example, with what you said with cleaning subscribers, I've also known that to be true. And I've also known that like there are actually a lot of subscribers that read emails, but they don't fire opens and clicks. There's like, if you actually dive into open and click data, you realize like the whole thing, like the whole industry around that is actually screwed. I only provide it because I feel like I have to. Because like every other competitor provides open and click data. When you start seeing how requests get generated, like another fact, we do a lot of work in like B2B and there's a whole bunch of like antivirus tools that will open every image pixel in an email, no matter what, even if someone hasn't even like clicked open because they like scan, they send a request just to make sure it's not a virus. They all count as like opens and clicks in software tools. But like no one really tells you that. A lot of the data is screwed and it is flawed. But in Bento, anyway, going to my point, we've built tools like in broadcast, when you send a broadcast in Bento, will always naturally send to your active subscribers first. And then when you combine that with batching, so you can say, all right, I've got a list of 10,000. I want to send to 500 people every 30 minutes of that 10,000. You'll drip feed to like Gmail and Yahoo and all those providers, basically your best subscribers first in very small increments. And that signals to Google that like you're a good email provider, right? These are people that are going to open the inbox. They're going to open those emails. So again, we sort and then we allow people to send in batches. And so when you send in batches, Gmail's like, oh, cool. I'm not getting bombed with 10,000 emails. I don't know. Like, is this a good send? Is it not a good send? I'm going to put that into like the high risk queue and evaluate it differently. When you send in really small batches, and I don't know why this happens. And I've asked other people, and like they don't know why, but most inbox providers treat us differently when you send in very small increments. So that's like a feature in Bento that everyone uses and I encourage everyone to use. And the other cool thing is when you start sending that out, you can hit pause at any point. So you know MailChimp, when you send an email out and it like kind of claps and you're doomed if you've made a mistake. And in Bento, once you hit send, you see a little animation. It's very cute. It's a little guy riding a tricycle. You can pause. And then you can say, oh, I made a mistake. And it would have only been sent to 100 people, 500 people, 1,000 people. And so, yeah, a lot of Bento, it's like I try and build features to reduce my anxiety, treat my customers a lot better. Hopefully, my other customers in Bento kind of see that. And then they also deploy the same. And the results of things like batch sending and ranking who gets emails first has been pretty ridiculous. Like we had one person come from MailChimp. Their list wasn't huge. It was like 15,000-ish. But they went from a 10% open rate to about 35%. And they actually started getting responses from their broadcast that they were sending. And they used to get none. And people were like, oh, I haven't seen your emails for ages. And the difference was sending very small amounts, which is just very different. Not many people do that. And I don't think a single tool does that I know of, unless it's enterprise-y.
So you're able to get a lot higher open rates because you can, instead of sending all at once, it sends in different like batches, starting with the most active engaged, which will get likely a good open rate, which will then kind of cascade
signal to Gmail.
Huh. I mean, that seems
logical.
Yeah. Well, it seems logical, but also like quite valuable. I mean, for, you know, any businesses with like large lists and they want to get them in front of their customers or subscribers.
And I think as well, like if you, let's say, you know, you start sending, I like the idea, you know, because then people are like, oh, what about sending at the right time zone, you know, which Bento can also do. But generally, I would always send in batches over, you know, at a perfect time in a certain time zone, because other tools allow you to send, you know, at 9 a.m. in whatever time zone the customer is. But then when you start looking at the data, the time zone data of your subscribers, you realize like that's also all over the place because a lot of them are doing tracking on the site itself, right? They're using servers and backend. And stuff like they're using webhooks maybe to push a subscriber. A lot of WordPress sites do that. You know, they'll capture a form and then they'll use the server to send that data to MailChimp. So we won't have the proper time zone data. There's a whole bunch of nuance there that we've tried to get right and we've tried to do a little bit differently. So
you mentioned kind of working with a handful of different customer segments. Who are your favorite customers? what are some of the people that are, I don't know, like as you're kind of building this and understanding who's using it and what they're doing, like.
We've got customers all over the place, man. Cause like people come for a whole bunch of different reasons. My favorite customer is probably Peter Murphy, which I'll just name drop cause I'll send this to him. Do you know Peter?
I don't, but I like that you specifically named an actual favorite customer.
Yeah, I like Peter Murphy. He sent us a couple of businesses and one of them's a zoo. And I like that because it's fun, man. Like, you know, they send booking events through and they do their broadcasts and they got some automations going and some forms. They track birthdays now. So I think now they've got the ability to be like, oh, whose birthday's in March and like send them offers. And then customers like Peter, he's also sent us enterprise customers. It's all over the place, but like he's generally pretty enthusiastic about the platform and willing to try stuff out. We've got e-commerce customers that are selling things from like herbs in Australia to food to a butcher. So it's like, it's all over the place, right? There's no, Bento is very flexible. And what I've found is that generally our approach to marketing, which is very e-commerce centric, does work in multiple different industries. I'm finding more software companies, which we've got a good handful of as well, they're applying more e-commerce tactics to onboarding, to when someone signs up to a SaaS product, there's a welcome sequence. And when they go into a certain feature, that's kind of like a browse abandonment sequence, an equivalent, right? Like they view a certain feature and then you start sending them emails. There's a lot of crossover in a lot of industries. So yeah, Bento serves e-com, SaaS, and kind of like random cowboys on the internet. And that, yeah, they're all great. The only hard ones are like WordPress customers because like that's such a big market and there's so many plugins and it gives me so much stress. But other than that, all good.
Cool. Well, shift gears a little bit. You are one of the, I don't know, most like prolific Twitter users of the people that I know. And like, I'm not super active on Twitter. I mean, I know that you get a lot of value from it. I'm not super active on it, but like, I guess I still have on my phone. It's like, I don't even log in, but I just get these random notifications that it'll be like yours or like Ben Hebert's tweets or like Travis, or there's like a few people that I'll get like notified of. And so yeah, I mean, like just kind of curious, I mean, what do you love about Twitter? And I mean, you mentioned that that's like been driving a lot of sales for you. Like, how does that work?
Yeah, I enjoy and I think I've always been like this. Like when I was 18, 19, I competed in two bodybuilding shows. And at the time, I found a lot of solace in the bodybuilding.com forums in a certain section there. And I posted updates and I posted what I was doing and how my training was going, how my fat loss was going. And, you know, they were like posts in a thread. It was very, you know, simple. I mean, we also do the same in like the DC, but less so. I'd probably do like less so there. How that kind of same behavior has transformed is that's kind of moved to Twitter for me. So it's kind of like that old school, you know, posting in the forums and posting little updates of what's going on and posing questions. That behavior for me has migrated to Twitter. And I find that Twitter is like this weird ecosystem of a lot of random niches and you kind of curate it to a certain extent, you know, like what you put out there is like what you attract. And that kind of energy has been good. I when I talk to like my partner, she often says that like my Twitter community, she's got a pretty big audience and she's like, your community's pretty positive. Like when you tweet, they always write nice things. And I think a lot of that's like the people I talk to, they're business owners, they're e-com owners, they're software owners, they're even competitors, almost all my competitors, like I have DMs with. So, and I like that. It's like, I wouldn't probably get that anywhere else. And on Instagram, like I post pictures of my dog and my food, but I've actually got too much anxiety to post. I keep bringing up anxiety because I'm having an anxious day. But like on Instagram, when I'm posting something, it's like, it's got to be pretty. I look at your posts and they're like long form and they're detailed. And I'm like, God damn, like I can't write what Nate's writing. Like, and I'm like, how do I fit something in my feed? And I'm just like, oh, I'm not going to do that. And then I can do the same thing on Twitter and it just feels like really lax, right? Or I can just post a photo of my dog and be like having a break and people are like, cute dog. It's just like, it's nice, you know? Does that make sense? How I explain that?
Yeah, it does. And one thing I'll say, I mean, the writing, I'm certain that you could also do it if you put the same time, effort, energy into it. And something also that might, that's actually been interesting as I kind of just got into the habit of consistently posting Facebook and Instagram. Like before when it was more sporadic, like it felt a lot more heavy and it was like, oh, like I'm doing this post and what are people going to think? And, you know, oh, like I work hard on it and then I post it. And then like, if it doesn't get the engagement, it's like, oh, you know, did I mess it up or blah, blah, blah. And yeah, and something that I think similar to Twitter is when you're just posting and just have the, you know, volume or the schedule or the routine with it, a lot less is hanging on each individual post. And so like now it's changed my relationship with each post. It's like, oh, like, you know, sometimes something will not, you know, get as much visibility or comments or whatever as other ones. And it's just kind of like, it's like, oh, huh, well, okay, like whatever, you know, got another one tomorrow. And you know, sometimes things do better. And it's like, oh, interesting. Like that, you know, that was better than I thought, but it's just, you know, kind of, you know, process versus outcome. And kind of when it's just like, oh, you're just, I mean, it's process versus outcome, but also just the volume of it where it's like, oh, if you post once a week, there's a lot more riding on it when it's, you know, versus every day. And I think on Twitter, when it's like, oh, you have, it's a lot like lighter. And so there's more, you know, there's more volume. And so you miss on one, nobody cares or notices and you don't care.
I do think like on Twitter though, it's also maybe the content's like really different. Like you'll have an e-commerce owner who's like, you know, my 3PL provider just screwed me, like who has recommendations? And then like 10 people will come in with like very opinionated opinions with, and like they'll directly tag a CEO of the company they work with. And then that CEO will reply. It's very like, I find it's very practical.
One thing else, can you share about, I know you've been doing for a while, the just like open office hours. What is that? And yeah, how's that been going?
Yeah, it's funny that's become like a thing. It's cool. So for the first, I don't know why I started doing this, but I got a Calendly subscription and then I just threw up Calendly link in my bio on Twitter. And I just said, if anyone wants to have a call with me, like whenever, here are my hours, and then just schedule a call. For the first few years, that was the number one way that I got my leads, and I got business, and I got consulting contracts, and I got some pretty cool, crazy deals from just people on Twitter that they were like scanning and they're like, oh, I need a guy for SEO. And then they like, oh, well, this guy, I can actually just book a call with him this afternoon and talk to him. There's just like no friction there. And so even for enterprise customers, like, oh, I'll just talk to Jesse instead of like going to an agency, having a proposal, all that. And so it made me more approachable, which I think was very advantageous in like the early days. I think maybe that's the keyword. It's like being like an approachable, friendly neighbor, but on the internet. Right? Someone that you can go over to their house and ask for some sugar or ask them to look after your dogs. Like that's kind of the vibe that you want to go into the internet with, I think, because yeah, that's how deals come across. And so I've spoken to like a lot of crazy, cool people randomly because they're just like, oh, I need SEO help.
Practically, I mean, so like, what are you doing? So you have a calendar, you know, how many spots you have open? You said it's on your Twitter bio. Like
For the longest, until recently, it was like open, like whenever you wanted. It just said open office hours, but it was just like 9 to 5, Monday to Friday in the time zone that I was in. And then people would just randomly book and I would show up and they would show up. And the premise of the calls in the early days was very like, and it's still that to an extent. It was very much like, hey, if you need help in with anything SEO or international SEO or PPC for AdWords, then just talk to me and I'm happy to help out. You don't have to pay a thing. And what's interesting is a lot of those early customers, well, not customers, those early calls turn into customers 2 to 3 years later. Plus, like one of my best devs that I have, who's currently on break, but he basically worked on all the hardest features last year for us. I had a call with his old boss 5 years ago. And when I asked, I was like, oh, hey, I need a React developer. That guy from 5 years ago, like responded and was like, hey, I've just sent you a DM. You need to work with this guy. And then I worked with him for the whole of the last year, and it's been like one of the best working relationships I've had. And you know, it's just like, you don't know how these things play out. So practically it's like, I got a link in my bio that says, I'll help you with things if you need a hand. People schedule it. I help them out. I don't sell. That's very critical. You don't sell. And then after they go, wow, that was weird. I got some help and I didn't leave with a check. I didn't leave with an invoice. And then you're then front of mind when they do need something like later on, you know?
So what do you do in the situations where like you really can help them and like, you know, like whatever they're struggling with, like what a good fit for, you know, one of your paid solutions?
I mean, I'll sell them. I mean, if it feels like a really good fit, I'll sell.
As you should. I mean, it's certain, like, you know, if it will, like, I was having lunch yesterday with this girl who saw me talk here, and you know, she reached out because it, you know, she was looking for help, and like, you know, it would have been a disservice like not to offer, you know, the solution. It's like, you know, and she's saying what she's struggling with, and it's like such a, like, we can just help so easily. And the premise is it's not a sales call, but like, if like you really can help, you can gracefully offer ways to continue the conversation. Or,
and the thing is you don't, like, there's a whole bunch of nuance here. Like, you don't know how successful someone is at the certain time. So for example, like, I've spoken to people and they've been doing $1,000 a month, you know, just starting out, and then I give them some SEO help, and it's not like that SEO help like helps them drastically, but it may benefit them a little bit. And then when they come back in 3 years and they're like, hey man, I'm doing $50,000 a month and I have a team and I've got some blah, 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 I need a full-time writer. And then it's like, oh, cool, I'll sell you my agency. Or if they're like, hey, I was considering like signing up to Customer.io or Klaviyo for like, you know, our store, but I want to try Bento because you helped me out all those years. Like, that's how stuff kind of actually practically plays out. So you just have to have a really long time horizon and just go, I'm not going to oversell. I see like a lot of people, they try and they're desperate, rightfully so. It's like really hard times right now, but they try and sell everything and they don't realize that like sometimes if you sell a bad customer, a bad client, it actually like cuts into your profits in ways that you don't really imagine. And so people kind of treat the calls as like, I'm just going to sell everyone no matter what, and doesn't work.
I mean, I like that a lot, and it's something that I've thought about. I mean, it just sounds like, honestly, it sounds fun. I mean, I know it's been a good experience for you, and like, I like that kind of stuff. And you know, and actually, I previously would say I had like a fear of just like no one booking calls, or like, I've kind of thought, I was like, oh, like if I offer my schedule and it's like, you know, no one takes me up on it,
then you have free time. It's great.
Yeah. Well, right. Well, but then also the thing I realized is that, like, you know, one, like, no one would know, you know, how are they going to, you know, it's not like a public thing, like, oh, like no one book calls. But then also, I mean, I was just thinking if I like did something like that and I added it in my, you know, Instagram bio and my Facebook bio and, you know, whatever, and just kind of made a couple slots.
Do you know something else that might happen? You may just have friends schedule time. I have that all the time. Like, friends will actually use my booking links to like grab time with me because I'm busy. I get distracted. I like forget, you know, you forget to catch up. But when that's available, like, I would constantly notice friends come in. They're like, oh, cool, this is how I can grab Jesse's time. And then you have a really great conversation. And I do that with some of my friends. Like, I know where their booking links are, and then I'll just grab and I'll grab a slot. So, you know, like, and it also breaks up your day, man. Like, it breaks up your day. And sometimes it's nice. Sometimes it's inconvenient. Sometimes I'm like dealing with a stressful bug and I got a call. So you just reschedule. You email them, you say, hey, man, I'm too stressed right now. Like, let's do something later. And they're like, no worries, let's do it. Because I mean, you're giving your time for free. So people are generally very, I've had one guy be toxic out of maybe a few hundred calls. Yeah. Hundreds of calls, one guy that was toxic. He was toxic because he didn't show up and I wouldn't reschedule for him. So he started swearing at me.
That seems a bit unnecessary.
People are funny. But anyway, it's like, it's generally people are lovely and kind, fun to connect with. And there's also like, again, you're not going to sell, but sometimes it is also worth asking for something at the end of the call. If you've given value, then it's okay to be like, hey, like mention me on Twitter, or, you know, post somewhere, or like, you know, could give me feedback on my site or whatever. People are generally pretty cool to do that.
Well, what else? Anything else to share that, is working well for you that might be beneficial for anyone that's listening?
Something recently that worked really well was I hired, do you know the firm Get Friday? They're in India.
Yeah, they're like, it was the
Tim Ferriss.
Yeah, 4-hour work week mention.
When I was working in the supplement industry, we hired a few people from that, and it was really beneficial, and they did our accounting and books and random marketing odd jobs. And I think think they did a whole bunch of layoffs last year. And so I found one of those employees and I just brought them on part-time. And I had, like, they're so well-trained, right? Because they've been doing so many SOPs for so many different businesses. And I slotted that guy right in. His name was Uday. He's been basically persistently following me up for like 4 years. He's like, hey man, you got any work part-time? He's working a full-time job. He just wants to do some part-time stuff. And I've handed him like every monotonous task. Like, and he's crushing it. And he's like passionate and he does it always right. And I'm just like, why didn't I do this earlier? So I don't know if that's helpful for anyone. Maybe it's like a healthy reminder, but to bring people into the company to offload work that may be nagging on you. Because again, that's something it's like I knew I should have done. There was someone that I could have assigned it to earlier, but for whatever reason, I just didn't. And then I did. And then now I've got way more time, which is lovely.
Take hire good people, get them to do this stuff. I mean, I'm all about that. Well, Jesse, man, I guess but before we wrap up, maybe just can you share a little bit about what you've got going on with the content agency? And yeah, I don't know if like e-com, if you have many e-com customers there, but I think it's a super crushing the model with what you've got there and just like super clean. And
yeah, it's a cool business. So basically like the problem that we solve is that firms in the US and Europe want to basically scale up their content, but they find that it's very expensive, especially in the early stages or if you're an SMB. And so they hire us to basically find contractors in Macedonia. We put them on their project basically full time. So they write every single day, Monday to Friday, produce great work. And then we kind of project manage them and do the editing and all that stuff. And the output's crazy, right? Because you're getting anywhere from 25 to 35,000 words a month, depending how hard the niche is and all that, for a really affordable rate, which I'll leave pending now because I may increase it. But yeah, it's a simple business. It's a fun, pretty happy business. The team's all pretty chill and cool. And there's a lot of demand. There's a pretty good waitlist for it. And a lot of affiliates hire us as well. So we'll basically manage an affiliate's team. Like we've got some affiliates where we manage 4 or 5 writers for them. And yeah, it's cool.
Loved hearing about like as that business has been coming together and just like it's such a great, you know, as a business owner, it's a great model. And I really like, I mean, inspired by some chats that we've had in the past, like really thought about how I could, you know, do something similar in the Amazon space and this. And I mean, kind of came up with some offers, like didn't really properly promote it, but also, I mean, I think it's something with like the, like content, it works so well with content. And I mean, not that it, you know, it could be modeled with other things, but I think with content specifically, it's just like such a good fit. Yeah. Anyway,
content's a good fit. I also think it can be done with like project managers, AdWords, VAs, finance. There's a lot of these like kind of critical roles where you can find pretty high trained contractors in Eastern Europe and bring them on pretty, you know, there's a whole bunch of websites for it. But yeah, developers as well. There's a few of these models. I've seen our model work in other kind of spaces and industries, but I do think you need to be like specialized and focused, because originally we were like, oh, maybe we can also do like customer support. But the critical part is that they work in every day on a customer's project, which is different. That's the critical part. And a lot of businesses, you can't really do that with customer support. A lot of like outsourced customer support businesses, like we'll have an agent split over 10 clients or whatever, which may still work. But I think, you know, maybe that model may work even better if it's just like one client, one customer support place, and then every day they're just writing docs to help their clients out, or they're writing content, and you got this like hybrid kind of support agent. That stuff I think would work.
Yeah, well, I think, I mean, one thing that I like about and think it works so well with the content is that it is like, it's just like, you know, a never-ending project backlog. You know, they always, you know, you just make a super long list of things to write, and they just start and they keep going. But some of these other ones, it's where it's like, you know, either it's harder to manage because, you know, there's different things they have to do. It's like, I mean, one is, you know, like the variety of activities is different, which just like adds a level of complexity. And then also like the volume. So like on the finance side, it's like, okay, like you don't need, you know, what's a bookkeeper going to do for 40 hours a week if it's like a, you can think of different, anyway, I mean, I think just like, that's why, I mean,
there's a lot of customers that like, there's a lot of customers out there that may need that. They're just kind of bigger ticket, right? But I think you're right. Like the content stuff works for like SMB, small biz, kind of DIY, like our community. The other spaces, I think they work for more like larger firms.
Well, I just think like the what you've got together with that, yeah, super clean and I like it. And anyway, Jesse, man, super, super fun to get to chat on the pod. And for listeners out there that are interested in, yeah, any of your products, services, they want to book a call with you. How do people get in contact?
So on Twitter, follow me at Jesse, J-E-S-S-E, T Hanley, H-A-N-L-E-Y. That's probably the best way. You can like send me a DM or like book a call or whatever. Businesses is like Bento Now. So BENTONOW.com. And then the agency, we've got a wait list. So I'm not going to shout it out. Just come to Bento. Give me more business there.
All right. Well, dude, this has been great. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Nate.
This has been the Ecom Exits podcast with Nate Ginsberg. If you're enjoying the Ecom Exits podcast, show your support by subscribing, rating, and reviewing this podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. This will help other smart entrepreneurs find us. We appreciate your support. We have a new episode every week on the Ecom Exits podcast, so catch you next time.